Good evening, and welcome to Outsources, KGNU's weekly program focused on people and issues of importance to LGBTQ and allied communities. I'm Glenda Russell, a frequent contributor to Outsources. Janice Bohan of the Outsources Collective, and I continue this evening with programming focused on allies and accomplices to targeted communities. We began this series in the aftermath of the 2016 presidential campaign and election. At that time, and since, a number of different groups became the targets of rhetorical and political attack. Think immigrants, people of color, Muslims, women, transgender people, well, the list goes on. Many in the LGBT community, as well as in other communities, have committed to extending our thinking about and activism around intentional allyship and coalition building. This evening, we will talk with two guests who have been doing extraordinary work in public schools and beyond, work to build individual and institutional allied support for LGBTQ students in the schools. Dr. Bethy Leonardi and Dr. Sarah Staley are both research associates in the School of Education at the University of Colorado. Together, they have created A Queer Endeavor, a program designed to change schools and make them safer and more welcoming for LGBTQ students. Welcome, Bethy and Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Hi.
Could we start by hearing about A Queer Endeavor? What does this program do? How did it get started? And just tell us what A Queer Endeavor is.
Sure. So we've been around since 2014. Bethy and I both were graduate students at CU in the School of Education, and that was really when this initiative took hold kind of in our last year of graduate school. And over the last 3 years, we have worked deeply to build partnerships with teacher education programs and local districts and school communities to support educators and school leaders, work toward organizing learning environments that really are safe and affirming for all kids, but in particular for LGBTQ youth, families, and staff.
Because if they're going to be safe for LGBTQ kids, they have to be safe for every kid and vice versa.
Right, right. Okay.
Bethy, do you want to add something to that description?
I guess what's important to know about A Queer Endeavor is that we really, the partnership piece is huge for us. And the way that we got started was actually through a partnership with the Twisted Foundation, who funded a lot of our work for the first 3 years, and they continue to support us. And we really see this initiative beyond the university and into the community, and we have appreciated a lot of community support.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much of your work is focused on climate for students, and how much is focused on climate for queer teachers and administrators, same-sex parents? Where does it all break down?
I think our at the elementary level, we kind of frame sexual diversity in terms of family diversity because we think that that's how it shows up a lot, especially for younger kids. And so supporting teachers to kind of disrupt their assumptions about what families look like and to support them to honor all kids' families. I think by and large, our focus is on supporting students, but pretty early in our work with our partnership with one local school district, we realized that even though this district had a pretty progressive policy and seemed to outwardly, you know, support all of their staff members, the LGBTQ educators in that district still felt pretty vulnerable. And so we realized the importance of really supporting those folks in this work as well.
And what are some of the ways you do that? What are some of the ways that you would, say, do things in the schools that would support LGBTQ teachers?
I think one of the ways that we have supported queer teachers in the districts is really through our programming. We have what we call teacher institutes, and those are like 3 sessions throughout the year, and we really build community with those educators. And we've had a lot of queer educators come to those, and I think the sense of community that we build in that space, a lot of the work is internal. The district says, in this particular district, we support you to be your full self. But as queer people, we all know that we have our different stories of how we came into our queer identities. Our relationships with our families are complicated sometimes. And so a lot of times it's not so much what the school or the district says is okay. It's what we, how we feel internally with ourselves.
And so some of that, I mean, that speaks to the need to attend to all kinds of levels in a school community, the levels of what's going on in the heads of LGBTQ and allied teachers, and also the subtler things that happen, even though the institutional rules may say we support you. Sometimes the day-to-day practice in the hallways and classrooms doesn't speak to that so well.
Right. We often ask the question, you know, when we have teachers reflect on, you know, what counts as normal in your classroom,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, think about the language and discourse that you use to address students and how, you know, students talk to each other. We often ask them to also think about adults in the space and how those same sometimes unsafe practices are operating to position adults in certain ways that are that make them vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we in our teacher institutes, as Bethy mentioned, there are three sessions that we were able to work with teachers over the course of a whole school year because we meet three times throughout the year. And in the second session, we talk explicitly about what it means to be make yourself a visible ally. And we offer some ways that you can do that. And we try to, you know, because I think a lot of straight cisgender educators might assume that queer identified teachers should just come out. And so we really try to complicate that and put the burden a little bit more on the straight cisgender allies to do the work of making the school safe, because it's not always the safest, you know, as an LGBTQ person to put yourself out there and be making yourself the visible ally for students.
So what are, because we're so interested in allies, what are some of the things that you might encourage these allies to do?
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of a line from our film. So we produced this. So early on in our work, we were trying to foreground topics of gender and sexual diversity with the pre-service teachers we work with at CU. And we read a lot of articles and we had a lot of discussions. And about 6-7 weeks into the semester, our students were kind of like, okay, we get it. You know, we need to support the gay kids. And we realized, okay, we're missing something. And what we were missing were hearing from the voices of youth. And so we organized this evening where we had a group of 14 middle school, high school, and college aged youth. We wanted to put them into conversation with one another about how they experienced school, and we ended up producing a little documentary out of it. And there's a line in the film where one of the students says, you know, I think being an ally starts with listening first, kind of like listening, watching, observing, getting curious. I think that's the first step toward being an ally.
And there are little things that you know, you can do, like hanging a rainbow flag, wearing an ally button, sharing your pronouns anytime you have a new class, making sure that your language is inclusive. So there are things, like material things, that we talk about with teachers that they can do. But I think being an ally for us is not done. It's not a process. You don't declare yourself an ally. You know, the students who need you declare you an ally, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's constant work. And I think in the beginning, it might seem easier, you know, because there are a host of things that you can do. But the longer you stay in it and in the work, I guess the more difficult it becomes to find like the little spaces that you haven't filled yet in your own practices and in your own sort of reflections. And so we like to remind people and ourselves also that this is not work that's ever done.
I'm struck by the, the circular intersectionality of this all, the degree to which, for example, for queer teachers, how they deal with LGBTQ students or any students depends so much on where they are in their own process. And where kids can get in their own process depends in turn on where their teachers are, and whether teachers are out, as we know, makes a huge difference. So it seems like a whole systemic kind of thing that you're undertaking, really. It's not working with individuals or even individual groups, but trying to change a whole system. That's a small undertaking.
Yeah, and that's how we frame it with the educators we work with. You know, what we're trying to do is change school culture, and that's, it's not easy. I think a lot of times the kind of the discourse around supporting LGBTQ youth kind of sits at the level of stopping bullying, which is important, and supporting individual kids, which is also important, but really to change, you know, change systems, we have to change heteronormative culture, and that's, yeah, that's not, not easy.
We're almost done.
Oh, good. Would you send around a memo? Yeah. Right.
Well, that's actually part of what we're interested in, because you not only do this, and it is a large undertaking, and it is an undertaking that you don't expect to get on top of at any minute now, but you also do research on it. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about the research that you're doing.
We did a study recently with school administrators. And I think for us, so first of all, we're fans of educators. That's why we're doing this work. Like, we realized that we had, as a university, sort of, we owe teachers in the field what we didn't prepare them to do through teacher education programs. And so we believe that educators want to do right by kids, and that's the kind of the framework that we have when we go in to work with groups of people. A lot of times, well, not a lot of times, but it feels like sometimes teachers are blamed for mostly everything that's wrong with education, and we don't subscribe to that narrative. And so what we see the work in the field is that it's very complex, and that it's not, here are a set of best practices, go do these in any school, they'll work. And so our recent study with school administrators was actually talking with them about how they understood the work. That's how people talk about it. Oh, we've been doing the work. Or mm-hmm. So we were interested, like, what does that mean to people? And what has it looked like in their buildings? And so we had about 7 administrators across grade levels and in different educational contexts. And we sort of realized that they were each muddling in their own specific ways and unique ways based on what it was that they were dealing with, you know, which students they were trying to support. Some took a super cultural approach, like, okay, we need to shift the culture, we need to change lesson plans. And then other administrators were really trying to support students transitioning, some with parents who were on board and some with parents who weren't on board.
Students who were transitioning around gender, you mean?
Yeah. And so, you know, the goal, I think, in getting this research out is to say, here's what's possible. You know, one administrator didn't win in our study. It was just, here's what people are trying to figure out, and here are different ways that people have navigated their school context and the parent community and, you know, kids.
Yeah, I think I would add to that. You know, we have such incredible access in one of the districts that we've partnered with, and so we've learned a lot about the process of, you know, what it's involved in building capacity, inclusive capacity and policy and practices within a district, and just really underscoring that this is a process and it's not a narrative of success or failure, but kind of constantly doing that muddling and that work of trying to figure out how to do it and understanding that learning doesn't always follow a linear trajectory. You know, there's kind of like a couple steps forward, one step back, and being generous with educators as they kind of lean into that process is something that we've learned through our research.
And bouncing off of something Bethy said a couple of minutes ago, it might look different in one context in one school than in another school.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I really appreciate this approach that's so educator positive and respects that educators, assumes the best, respects that educators are trying to do their best rather than going in and letting them know how bad they really have been at what they've been trying to do. In case you just joined us, you are listening to Outsources on KGNU Radio in Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins. Joining us on Outsources tonight are Dr. Sarah Staley and Dr. Bethy Leonardi, who are from A Queer Endeavor. We're talking with them about building allies for students in the schools.
And speaking of context, I would like you to talk about, you know, you've just been saying the context is different, where different administrators and different teachers might do different things. Sarah, you had mentioned a little bit ago that there are some things that you do with elementary age kids that might be different from kids who are older. Give us a developmental picture here in 2 minutes. I mean, y'all are doing really amazing work around a really compelling and challenging issue. You can give me 2 minutes on development, right? how do you think differently about elementary schools versus middle schools versus high schools when you're thinking about a climate change?
Mm-hmm. I think, I guess what comes to mind is in elementary school, I think kids are pretty ripe. I mean, they are malleable, and gender is an interesting thing to kind of explore with young kids. You know, who made up these pink and blue rules, and what do we think about them? And we've seen some of the elementary teachers that we've worked with have some really powerful conversations with even kindergartners around you know, gender norms when it's kind of framed in that way that kids can make sense of and understand. I think it's easier to, and I'm thinking of another line from our film, one of our elementary teachers says, you know, it's easier to build community in elementary school. And you kind of think about that work as building the allies of tomorrow. You know, once kids get into middle school and high school, I think bullying becomes more of an issue and more pervasive. And I think that gets complicated around, you know, supporting students. What would you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I'm trying to think of some kind of trajectory, and I guess we see the work really, you know, in the social emotional curriculum and like how we engage with students around community and things like that. But I think we really see the work coming through curriculum. And so I guess what Sarah just pointed to in terms of, you know, conversations with students about gender, like how are we using stories? What kind of stories are we reading? And also what kind of questions are we asking? So even in the elementary, some of the books for elementary kids around gender, for example, you know, the story is that the kid who was assigned male at birth shows up in a dress and he gets bullied. And, you know, that trope is very common. And so we can have a conversation with kids. Okay, so would we bully this kid? And they're like, no. And then everybody congratulates, you know, themselves. They would be a better community than the community in the book. But we even support our teachers to say, like, okay, so is that the story that we always want to tell about the kid who wears the dress? That kid is still outside of the norm. So nothing's changed with the norm. So mm-hmm. how can we have different conversations with kids? And instead of having the conversation about would we make fun of Jacob, or that was the kid in the book, in Jacob's new dress, would we make fun of him? Instead, we have them sort of think about flipping that conversation and saying, like, what is it about us that we use this metaphor? Like, why do we say no to other people's yes? So instead
nice.
Of...
Nice, yeah.
Yeah. So we kind of use some queer pedagogy and queer theory to support teachers to not only include LGBT people in history, but also complicate the ways that we're talking about difference and what's normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess taking that up to, you know, mm-hmm. high school, I mean, it's the same kind of thing. Like, what are we supporting students to understand in terms of systems and the ways that systems have... marginalizing effects on people, what can we do about it? And also, how are we actually a part of it? Like, the system is in some building, mm-hmm. you know, two mm-hmm. blocks away. It's mm-hmm. we enact
it's
the system.
Us. Yeah.
So
That's great.
Do you all in your work actively explore other dimensions of identity and how the same principles apply in those circumstances? Mm-hmm. I know that you're a queer endeavor, but queer can mean a million things. So mm-hmm. how do you go about doing that, or in what ways do you do that?
Yeah, well, I think just kind of building off what you just said, this question, it's our favorite essential question to organize curriculum around is, you know, what counts as normal and who gets to decide, and what would it look like to disrupt some of those dangerous norms. And, you know, in the beginning of our work with educators, we foreground gender and sexual diversity because there's been an historical silence around it for a long time, and there's just a lot of knowledge that needs to be built. But once teachers have hung out with us for a while, they start to notice other kinds of norms around language, around mm-hmm. ability, around race, and how those are operating in their schools too. You know, to really work well for some kids and not at all well for other kids. And so kind of using that question that foregrounds norms and how, what are the norms that we're seeing, and what would it look like to shift some of those norms, I think is one of our entry points.
Could you tell us maybe a story about something that has happened in the schools that you have responded to, or something that has come out of your trainings in some way? I understand that they're probably, you know, that you're not, we're not asking you to tell stories about individual people whom we could identify, just stories about how this rolls out in real life.
There are so many stories.
There are so many stories.
I mean, I'm hesitant to tell the success stories. Is that what you did? You want?
Yeah,
success?
I want a success story. But people need to be.
We like the messy stories because, I think the messy stories to us give people hope to plug in wherever they are. Sometimes the success stories, it's like, oh, that would never happen at my school.
Mm-hmm. And so we like could never do that.
We could never do that, right? And so I think the messy stories are. They invite more people in, but
nice. So do a messy story that's inviting, that invites people to do their work.
Mm-hmm. I think the messiest stories that we've been a part of are the stories of young kids whose parents aren't maybe on board for their gender process, and they have, you know, a lot to learn, and I'm just thinking about like how teachers navigate that line between supporting students and being in the role of educator, which is not the same as the role of parent. And so some stories that come to mind involve that, like talking with, I mean, we have a lot of conversations, phone conversations and email conversations about, you know, how do I support a student when, you know, parents are saying, don't use the pronouns that the student wants you to use, and don't use the name. And so those are really sticky and kind of heartbreaking. And also, you know, the biggest goal is to get the parent in the conversation and not perpetuate some kind of like schism.
I love the way you're talking about this whole thing. I mean, it's the same, it's a parallel to how you're talking about the teachers. You're allies to everybody in the system. It's a lot of work. I am very aware that we're running out of time. I'm hoping that the two of you will join us again and maybe bring a couple of allies from the schools with us. Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah,
that would be amazing.
Cool.
And in just the few minutes we have left, what I'd really like to hear about is a fundraiser that you have coming up in November. And I know I want to go. Janice, you want to go.
Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
So tell us about this fundraiser.
Okay, so I think in the beginning of this segment, we talked about how important community is to us and community being a part of a queer endeavor. And just recently, we had a few artists reach out to us to ask if they could do a fundraiser for us. And we were pretty excited about that. So this will be on November 11th at the Mercury Cafe in Denver, starting at 8 p.m. And we'll have the poet Megan Falley joining us and Laura Goldhamer, who's a musician, and the headliner will be The Cabin Project.
Wow. That sounds great. And so should people get tickets ahead of time or get them at the door?
I think getting tickets ahead of time would be a good idea, I hope.
Yeah. You hope it's going to sell out. People stretched out up the stairs and out the door. So how would people do that? How would people get tickets?
The Mercury Cafe website will have
great.
Tickets.
Great. November 11th.
All right. Be there or be sad that you weren't. In just the minute or so we have left, I know we haven't asked you a ton of things, but what is the thing you were dying to tell when you got here that you haven't had a chance to talk about yet?
I would say just how much our initiative is a community endeavor. And so we are tremendously grateful for all of the community partners, the university, the Twisted Foundation, the schools we work with, folks like y'all who have us come on to kind of talk about our work. That's really valuable to us. And so I think just to give a shout out to all of our community supporters is important for us to say.
And along those lines, I think we want to share gratitude with folks in this community who've done this work for years and years and years and made it possible for a queer endeavor to even exist. That's not lost on us. This is a historical movement in this area, and we joined at this particular time. But we have a lot of gratitude for the folks who came before us.
And we are so glad that you have joined doing really important work. This is Dr. Sarah Staley and Dr. Bethy Leonardi from A Queer Endeavor. They will be joining us again in the future. You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU. Join us each Monday at 6:30 for another show by, with, and for the LGBTQ and allied communities, or visit us online
at www.kgnu.org/outsources.
Now, stay tuned for some announcements that you'll want to know about.
And now for a few announcements of upcoming events. On Friday, November 3rd, a panel discussion, Making History, One Signature at a Time. November 3rd, 2017, marks 30 years since Boulder voters banned discrimination based on sexual orientation. This was the first time in our nation's history that voters alone made discrimination against LGB people a crime. Four of the initiators of this measure will discuss the campaign, what drove their efforts, the obstacles they face, and the lessons they learned. Audience questions and remembrances are welcome. For more information, visit outboulder.org. Then, the event we've just been discussing. On Saturday, November 11th, 8 o'clock at the Mercury Lounge in Denver, a benefit for A Queer Endeavor, which is now a familiar program to you. Come support their efforts to reach out more broadly while enjoying the work of some local and national artists, including Megan Fally, Laura Goldhamer, and The Cabin Project. For more information, go to Facebook and search for A Queer Endeavor, then click on Events, or visit the Mercury Cafe website at mercurycafe.com. And finally, November 14 to 17 will be Transgender Awareness Week, a series of events sponsored by Out Boulder County that will begin with the film Major, which explores the life of Miss Major Griffin Gracie, a formerly incarcerated Black transgender elder and activist who's been fighting for the rights of trans women of color for over 40 years. The rest of the week will be full of an assortment of events, including panels, a comedy show, a name change workshop, and more. It will close with a vigil and reading of names. For more information, visit outboulder.org. That's our show for this evening. We hope you'll join us again next Monday for another edition of Outsources here on KGNU, Denver, Boulder, Fort Collins, or listen anytime at kgnu.org/outsources. You can also find our shows by searching for Outsources on the KGNU News website at news.kgnu.org. Also, feel free to email us with comments about this or any Outsources show. You'll reach us at outsources@kgnu.org. Thanks again for listening. Hope to see you again next week.